St. George and the Naughty Dragon, by Yu Mei. Note from the translator. Despite the epic tale associated with him, little is known about St. George, though he may well have been a Roman soldier and martyred in Lydda under the rule of Emperor Diocletian. This peculiar account of St. George's life is most certainly ahistorical, and also significantly later than even Jacobus de Voragine's 13th-century narrative, The Golden Legend. If anything, the anonymous author of The Merry Tale of St. George and the Naughty Dragon owes more to Chaucer's The Canterbury Tales than to any Christian traditions concerning the historical George of Lydda. Among many anachronistic absurdities, our anonymous storyteller relocates the city of Lyban to the fenlands of ancient Britain and recasts Sir George as an Arthurian knight-errant. In the spirit of that free-handed approach, I have elected to present the lay reader with a more dynamic translation to modern English, prioritizing the preservation of the comic flavor and tone of the original tale. The reader may wish to picture our anonymous storyteller recounting excerpts of his manuscript to an audience of simple serfs, perhaps during the Feast of St. George. No doubt the anonymous storyteller delighted in his little joke, to take an all-too-familiar tale his listeners thought they knew well, only to stand the whole story upon its head. It should also be noted that, although the numerous spanking scenes might seem strange to a modern audience, corporal punishment was a common and universally accepted aspect of medieval life. Given the almost slapstick quality of the tale, it is not hard to imagine the spankings being played out with puppets, or upon willing, or not so willing, volunteers from the audience, to fits of laughter.
Chapter 1. The Knight, the Maiden, and the Dragon. The sun was setting over the lush green hills of England, casting long shadows across the fields. The village of Silin was quiet, save for the occasional bleating of sheep and the distant sound of a blacksmith's hammer. It was a peaceful place, but for one thing, the dragon. For nearly a year, the dragon, Angeltwick the Red Worm, had terrorized the village, pillaging their livestock each month. An entire barn had been knocked over and set ablaze. The beast had been witnessed spewing noxious venom, which burned at the touch like acid. At that time, the pagan king of Silin was little more than a village patriarch and resentful of the rising Christian dominion of King Arthur Pendragon, enthroned in Camelot. But as the villagers began to fear for their families, lest the dragon should begin demanding their maiden daughters as a sacrifice to slake its hunger, the king of Silin sent a messenger to seek aid from a monastery of the Christian church. These mendicant monks, in turn, prayed fervently and sought succor from the greatest knights in all of England. Unfortunately, the knights of the Round Table were all out in search of the questing beast, so only Sir George of Cappadocia answered the call. Sir George rode into town on his white horse, his Roman armor gleaming in the sunlight. The king of Silenus stumbled from his wooden fortress on the motte to greet him, before bowing so deeply, his bony buttocks poked high in the air.
"Thank you for coming, Sir George. We have suffered under the Red Worm's tyranny for too long. Will you kill the dragon, Angeltwish?"
Sir George removed his Gallic helmet so that his curly golden locks billowed in the cool summer air.
"Pax Vobiscum. In the name of the Blessed Virgin, and for the glory of the true Christian Church, I vow to deliver you from the hellish beast that haunts you. What can you tell me of the Leviathan?"
The king of Silenus tore his robe and beat his breast in despair.
"It's going to eat my beautiful, beloved daughter. The Princess Sabine."
"Zounds. Does the beast have her now?"
The king of Silenus paused in the middle of sprinkling ashes on his hair to properly prepare for mourning the loss of his princess.
"Well, no, not yet. But it's going to ask for her sooner or later. I mean, just look at her."
Sir George glanced up at the wooden keep, to find a fair maiden dressed in a white gossamer robe, fanning herself with a white kerchief, and resting atop the wooden stakes. When the pointed ends of the stakes poked her heaving breasts, she squeaked and dropped the handkerchief.
"Oh, silly me. I keep forgetting those things are sharp. Hail, noble knight. Did you know I'm single? And I'm a virgin."
Sir George choked before making the sign of the cross.
"O Lord, preserve me against the lusts of the flesh. Why must the pagan barbarians dress so immodestly?
Before Sir George could deliver a homily from the Proverbs against lustful women, the King of Silenus began to kowtow, grabbing handfuls of dirt and throwing them into the air.
The beast claims a sheep, a pig, or an ox every week. Soon enough, we'll need to sacrifice our virgin daughters to slake its lust for flesh.
Sir George sighed in relief, before his horse surprised him by backing away, snorting in annoyance at the dust being thrown by the King of Silenus. Sir George had won his noble steed, Bayard, after resisting the temptations of the enchantress Calib, but that's another story. At the moment, Sir George was annoyed with the pagan king's performative humiliation.
Very well, since the dragon has seized no maiden, tell me everything you know of its strength and trickery. How large is it?
The King of Silenus spread his arms wide, but when he found his arms were not large enough to convey his point, started darting around in circles.
Large. It's huge. Enormous, even. Well, at least, sometimes it is. Some black magic lets the red worm change its shape. Sometimes, it appears as a giant, winged lizard, as large as a cottage.
At this, the King of Silenus gestured to one of the thatched houses, which housed a family of his serfs who had stepped out to watch the strange goings-on. The father first scratched his thick beard, then his bald scalp.
Ack, aye. And Jeltwick he knocked Tommy barn with his claws, he did. Then torched it to ash.
His daughter, who had a plain round face, interrupted.
Nay, Daddy. It was with his tail, not his claws. I remember I saw him chasing after a sow, then taking fright at the sound of the barn falling over behind him. Sort of wailed like a great cat he did, before he grew small and flew away.
The mother, a matronly woman who looked every bit as sturdy as her husband, rolled up her sleeves.
Silly girl. What's it matter whether he knocked it over with his claws or his tail? It's still knocked over, innit?
The daughter nodded.
Aye, mammy. But I thought 'twere important for the good Sir Knight to know.
The father shook his finger.
Nay, you mind about that. Keep hold of your tongue lest you're spoken to, and mind your elders, else I'll take you cross my knee. Do you mind what I say?
The girl nodded, holding her hands behind her back.
Aye, Daddy. I'll mind.
Ignoring the King of Silenus, Sir George hailed the girl, and nudged Bayard to trot him towards the peasant family.
You good folks. You got a good look at the dragon?
The mother puffed up her chest.
I saw him once. Well, I saw the barn knocked over, then I saw his tail as he flew away.
The father patted his wife's behind playfully to interrupt her, then puffed up his own chest, before sneezing.
Achoo. I've seen Angel twice plenty of times, flying around above the livestock. Once I saw him come smashing down to the ground, hard enough to send the earth shaking. Then he rose from the dirt and spewed foul venom. I hid before he could eat me, but look, when I touched a pool of the venom, it burned my finger, as though I'd touched fire. Kerchew.
Sir George lightly dismounted, but before he could closely examine the man's burned finger, the girl tugged on her father's sleeve.
I think it sounded more like a sneeze than a spit, Daddy. And poor Angel crashes every time he tries to snatch up one of our animals. I don't think the dragon's very good at flying, or catching anything for that matter, oop. Ouch.
Before the girl could explain further, her father scooped her up with one arm and began spanking her over her wool skirt, clearly a well-practiced gesture. Every few words he paused to land a firm slap for emphasis.
Oi, Maggie. How many times must I tell you not to speak, lest you're spoken to?
Maggie yelped, but managed to answer between slaps.
Ouch. I'm sorry, Daddy, Ork. I forgot, Aich. May poor bum.
Not wanting to anger the father further, Sir George deftly put a hand on the man's shoulder to shield the girl from further punishment.
But, good sir, the fault is mine. I wish to speak to your whole family to learn what you have seen, including your daughter.
The man's mustache drooped as he considered this, before he shrugged and set his daughter down.
Well, now that you mention it, I suppose you did. All right, Maggie, no more spanking.
Pleased to hear this happy news, Maggie only winced slightly, bouncing on her heels as she rubbed away the soft sting.
Thank ye, Daddy.
Sir George kneeled to reach Maggie's eye level.
Now, Maggie, You said you heard the dragon wail like a cat and grow small? What else did you see?
Maggie pointed to a broken tree.
He ran off like a kooky coot, before lifting off. He was much faster while he was small, about the same size as me Daddy, I'd say, but he still snapped at you in two.
Have you ever seen the dragon while it was fighting? Has it ever attacked men or women, or does it only hunt animals?
Perhaps wondering if she was about to be spanked for interrupting again, Maggie looked to her mother and father. When she saw them give her an encouraging nod, Maggie launched eagerly into a new story.
Well, once when I was sent to collect hemp for rope, a man with a knife came out of the woods and grabbed me. Then, Angel came out of the sky like a hawk, and snatched him up. Whoosh!
Her father puffed his mustache.
You were lucky, Maggie. That beast meant to eat you.
Eager to learn more, Sir George's blue eyes widened.
Did the dragon kill him? Eat him?
Maggie shook her head and used her hands to pantomime the scene for Sir George.
Nay. The dragon only dropped him, like this. His leg went crunch. And the man cried and cried. He sounded like this. You how? Me poor leg. There's the man over there.
As Maggie pointed, Sir George turned and saw a shivering man stuffed uncomfortably inside a hanging gibbet of rusty iron bars. Around his neck was hung a wooden sign that read, Thieves! Rapists! Behold and beware!
You how? Me poor leg. Me poor leg,
wailed the outlaw. Sensing the tension in his noble steed, Sir George stroked Bayard's neck as he considered all he had heard.
Venomous bile? Fiery breath? Angeltwisch can fly like a hawk, run like a hound, and change its shape and size. Truly, this vile abomination must have crept from the pit of hell itself. I shall have to spend the day in prayer and preparation before facing this monster.
Feeling rather annoyed at being ignored, the King of Silenus tapped Sir George on the shoulder.
Yes, you shall be my guest tonight, and we shall see you off tomorrow morning. If you succeed, we won't have to sacrifice any virgins to the beast. Hopefully, it has enough to eat to keep its hunger satisfied for another week.
Furious at the king for his cowardice, Sir George brushed off his embrace and began to mount Bayard.
You shall not sacrifice a single soul to that monster while I draw breath.
Maggie raised her hand.
But aren't you going to save the girl he has now?
In his shock, Sir George dropped his Gallic helmet, which clanked like a bell as it struck his boot.
What girl?
Maggie glanced nervously at her parents before shuffling her feet.
The one he has hidden in his cave. I heard her crying when I snuck off to try to get a peek at the dragon.
Maggie's mother stiffened.
You went looking for the dragon? Why would you do that?
I'm sorry, Mammy. But after Angel saved me from the outlaw, I wanted to say thank you.
Sir George rounded on the King of Silenus.
But you said the dragon hadn't claimed any of your people yet.
The king shrugged.
Yeah. None of our maidens are missing. Now that you mention it, I suppose the woodcutter has been hearing the screaming and wailing of women coming from the grove for the past few months. What? You expect me to keep track of every other king's property for him?
Sir George rushed back to Maggie, holding her gently by both shoulders.
Maggie, where is the dragon's lair?
Tears brimming in her eyes, Maggie pointed to a ridge of bluffs behind a wooded grove.
Follow the brook to the pool by the rocks. There's a great cave like a mouth, and the dragon likes to splash down into the pool, then crawl into it.
Sir George flew to Mount Bayard's saddle.
Thank you, Maggie. You have been a godsend.
Bayard reared majestically as Sir George drew his sword, Ascalon, from its sheath and held it aloft. Knowing there was not a moment to lose, Sir George left his helmet behind as he rode Bayard toward the dragon's lair at a gallop, his golden hair fluttering behind him. The clouds parted, and a crepuscular ray of sunlight seemed to point the way forward. Sir George's thundering baritone voice echoed across the village of Silenus.
Deus vult.
The villagers stood in awe, mesmerized by this display of chivalry. The spell was broken when Maggie sighed.
Is it time for my spanking now, Daddy?
Her father shook his head as he remembered where he was.
Oh, Fuke, that's right. You're spanking. Because I love ye, I've got to spank ye. Come here, Maggie.
Maggie nodded.
Aye, Daddy. I'm ready.
Without any further ceremony, he rested his boot on a bucket, scooped his daughter up, balanced her over his raised knee with one arm, flipped up her skirt with his free hand, and began spanking Maggie then and there. Without the protection of her woolen skirt, Maggie started to holler as she felt each swat land slowly across her thin underskirt.
Ogone. Me poor leg. Me poor leg,
wailed the outlaw in his gibbet.
Ogone. Me poor bum. Me poor bum,
wailed Maggie.
End of chapter 1, part 1. To be continued. Spanks for listening. If you enjoy my spanking stories, please like and subscribe. And consider sending me a tip on Ko-fi. You may spank it once,